Contact lenses, also same-day service available. 4 prescriptions in stock. 6 Rivers Opticals, celebrating over 34 years of keeping life in focus. Open Monday through Saturday on Harrison Avenue, next to Lima's Pharmacy in Eureka. Learn more at sixriversoptical.com. Have a great day, everybody. It's 1:30.
Thank you for staying with KHSU on your Tuesday, August 23rd, 2016. I'm Wendy Butler, and it's time for Art Waves. Today on the program, I'm speaking with Michael Warr. He's the poetry editor for a book titled Of Poetry and Protest, From Emmett Till to Trayvon Martin, published in June by W.W. Norton and Company. The concept for this book came from Philip Cushway, who brought together a team to create a publication that includes not only text, but photographs and other types of graphic designs that enhance the text. Michael Warr is an award-winning poet. He's also deputy director of San Francisco's Museum of the African Diaspora, and he joins me by phone. We begin with a look at one of the poems, Tallahatchie Lullaby Baby by Douglas Kearney.
I just think the poetry on it is so musical.
Definitely.
It's so musical. Cattail cast tattles, till tail lowing low along the hollow. It's beautiful. I would like to have you talk about why you chose this one.
Well, there's a couple of different reasons. One is, it's just as you say, it's Douglas is a wonderful writer and artist. And one of the things about this book is it shows the diversity among black writers. And sometimes I don't think people realize how much diversity there is. And diversity within the artists themselves. And there is this musicality within his writing. Just the title itself, you know, Tallahatchie Lullaby Baby, the fact that it specifically refers to Emmett Till. That didn't have to happen with all of these poems because the poetry also kind of shows the complexity of black life, right? There is no one type of blackness, one type of writer, one type of experience. And each one of these poems, I see the whole book as if it, you know, was musical, but different types of music. So this poem in particular just takes a very different take through its language. Up skimming skin up on pond, scum shift ish, going slow along the hollow. How may mayfly a light brown brow? What is chucked the hachi swallow? You know, I see poetry as art that takes you out of the pedestrian use of language. I see pedestrian use of language is absolutely critical. We have to use it every day.
Mm-hmm.
But when you name it poetry, and when you write as poetry, you have to take it beyond ordinary language, and that's what this poem does.
Before we go into a little bit talking about the non-poems, the essays. And interview excerpts, I want to talk about Left, Nikki Finney, Left. Hurricane Katrina, 2005, am I correct? And I want to look at it as well.
I mean, again, you know, although the book is titled From Emmett Till to Trayvon Martin, it's meant to encompass, this kind of broad sense of how all of these aspects of black life and how our communities are impacted by injustice, by the politics of where we live, that a poem like this can also be encompassed within this book, because again, the way the African American community was forgotten during Hurricane Katrina, it's another side of that coin. I think that this book is trying to make people remember. Recently, I was talking to someone about memory being a tool that you can use to fix things that are not right. If you don't remember them, then you're not going to do anything about them. And to me, this Finney does that. It not only describes what happened, again, in a very artful way that raises it above your everyday language through poetry, but it kind of captures the life of the people who were impacted, as well as the conditions, and puts in perspective, you know, how they're valued or not valued in this society.
I want to ask you about this because I'm looking at the poem now. A lot of times, well, there's a couple of different things I think about when I think about poetry and read poetry. One is the reading of it, say, sitting and reading it to yourself. And, mm-hmm. of course, the other is performing it.
Right.
And so with this, I'm sitting here and I'm looking at it, and it is laid out a certain way. For instance, you know, we see words such as, you know, with a green plastic window awning pushed over to the side, right where the missing E was last seen. And then there's the part next that is pushed in or indented from that. Mm-hmm. My mother said to pick the very best one.
Right.
It's removed from right. that first. And so that really, that enhances my reading of it. It makes me pause. And
this is another thing about the intention in the design of the book, that there is a very visual approach. We wanted these pages to look different, and that's not us making those decisions in the sense of where those line breaks are, the space between the words, but that's the poet's choice. We're selecting the poems, right? And we're deciding where they wind up in the book, in a sense. And so this particular poem, Left, it is really broken up in a way that gets your eye to move across the page in a certain way, but also to see the words, to add that sense of rhythm that the poet might be reading the poem at. But also, it's to accentuate a point, right? And this is a very, very good example of it. That was one of the advantages we had to doing this coffee-sized table book, a little bigger than most books of poetry, which was really necessary to give the art that's in here. There's commissioned art in here, as well as the photographs, all of the portraits taken by Victoria Smith of the poets, that you needed space to do that in. But it also favored these longer poems, like the poem we've just been talking about.
And then we've got the poem New Rules of the Road, Reginald Harris, and that is on page 87 of the book.
Yeah, that's a very relevant poem right now, too.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, we're looking at, there's a flow to it. I see a number of different types of emotion in this poem, but the way it's laid out, the way it flows from one part to the next, to the next, to the next, it's almost calming. It's almost calming, even though there's anger in here.
Definitely. It's a very kind of centered poem in a way. I think that's the way I would look at it when you say calming, because you literally can look from left to right in this poem, and it's as if you are going down or walking up stairs. And again, the rhythm of it, the emphasis on some of these words. This is a relatively short one. Do we have time to read it?
Yeah, could you?
Yeah, sure. So this is New Rules of the Road by Reginald Harris. Make no sudden movements, like from your neighborhood to someplace you don't belong. Keep your hands visible at all times, above your head, in these brand new handcuffs. Speak only when spoken to, or not at all. You have the right to silence. Have proper ID on you at all times. There is no right to travel. Reply only to the questions asked. You have nothing to say we want to hear. Give the officer only the materials requested. You have nothing to show us. We want to see. Do not leave the vehicle unless told to. You have nothing. Go quietly when arrested. You are nothing. Do not resist. You are a thing. Do not run. You have no rights. do not say you do not fit the profile. This is America. You are the profile.
Michael Warr, reading Reginald Harris's poem, New Rules of the Road. One of a collection of poems and other writings and insights included in Of Poetry and Protest, from Emmett Till to Trayvon Martin, in bookstores and available for purchase online. And you are listening to Art Waves on KHSU. I'm Wendy Butler. We continue now with more of our interview. Michael Warr is the book's poetry editor, and he joins me by phone.
Am I looking at a painting or a photograph? Hoodie, original art by Chris.
Yeah, that is original art by Chris Kohler, and it is a painting, and it's called Hoodie. Mm-hmm. It was done in 2014 of Trayvon Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, if people go to, those of you who don't have the book yet, if you go to the Facebook page of the same title of the book of Poetry and Protest, from Emmett Till to Trayvon Martin, you'll see that image in color. It's a striking contrast of red and black and white. And each one of these, each poet has a spread of 4 to 6 pages. This is also something unique about the book. So every poet has their original portrait, as I said, taken by Victoria Smith, then what we call their I statement, which is their first-person biographical essay about why they're a poet, how they became a poet, why they remain a poet, and how that relates to the theme of the book. And there's also an interspersing of archival images, commissioned art, and then the poem itself.
There are two pieces of writing that strike me that are not, I wouldn't say they are poems. They are writing, such as you included an excerpt of an interview with Harry Belafonte.
Mm-hmm.
And the interview was, it's excerpted from an interview conducted by Blackside Inc., May 15th, 1989. Well, first of all, let me ask you the question about this, and then I want you to talk about why you wanted to include it. He talks, among other things, there's a section in this called The Presence of Death.
Yeah.
And Harry Belafonte talks about meeting and talking with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And King talked about, here's the actual words. He had come to grips with death because he believed that he could not clearly make decisions if a preemptor was a concern for life.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
That is powerful. I mean, you know, where bravery is embedded in your kind of daily existence, right? Because you know that threat is there because of the actions that you're taking and the words that you are saying, right? I mean, and I think that that's one of the things that this book captures, is the power of words, whether that come from hate or love or using words to transform, and whatever the intention, they can be very, very powerful. And this piece by Harry Belafonte, and this is just excerpts from it, is in here for a couple of different reasons. One is that when we first started this project, this book was really going to center on the civil rights movement, and it was to coincide with the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. And the original title was There Came a Thunder, a Poetry and Protest. Mm-hmm. And that changed in the course of the process, but what was there from the very beginning is that we knew we were, on the one hand, looking at the civil rights movement from the 1950s and 60s, and that we were also witnessing a new civil rights movement, particularly as it was expressed in Black Lives Matter. Say that you've picked out from Harry Belafonte, you know, the first subheading is Black Power and the Impact of Words, you know, and then what Dr. King feared most. There's this whole section on peace versus patriotism, in quotes. And so it kind of shows this thread that runs through part of our history, and then we take that up to the current day, specifically with the piece by Dr. Reverend Barber, which is the epilogue, mm-hmm. Who is the leader of the moral movement in North Carolina. So we were trying our best with the space that we had to show that thread running from the old to the new civil rights movement. And in fact, one of the very first pages you see in the book with the title is the face of a young woman with Black Lives Matter written on her cheek. It's another wonderful image in this book.
Protest poetry. This is not an interview. This is a writing by Amiri Baraka.
Right. This was commissioned, actually.
Oh, okay. I like the things that are being talked about in this, such as why would we call writing about our life as we know it, what we see, how do people confuse that with protest, right? Another phrase that always bothered me was outsider art, because, okay, it's art. It's what I see. I'm on the outside. You know, no, I'm on the outside. I'm on the inside. This is my life. So I'm thinking that you chose to put this in because, of course, the title of the book is of poetry and protest, but it's not like you've just included a bunch of poems about protests.
Right. Yeah, and I think that even though that was not, you know, we didn't tell Amiri Baraka what to write, but I think that, you know, it's Amiri Baraka, right? He is going to go... He's going to go to the core, and he is going to find perhaps, you know, an opposite in what he's being asked to do. But the first line that you're referring to, I have always resented the term protest poetry because it seemed to me that it was dropping the poetry I felt closest to in a lead box so it wouldn't contaminate mm-hmm. the dull-ass mainstream. In a very interesting way, even though I didn't see it when I first got that piece from him, and we were working on this piece, you know, I'm the editor, right? So I'm editing Amiri Baraka's essay, which is daunting, at midnight often with him on the phone, him in New York and me here in San Francisco. And that was just about a month before he passed away, by the way. I think this may have been it may have been his last essay, or at least one of his last essays. But the thing is even though it didn't strike me this way at the time, I realized that my take on this book, like, for instance, you know, there's images in this book of the poets laughing and smiling. And one poet, when he saw his image that way, he felt really... he didn't feel good about it because he thought that it didn't fit with the theme, the nature of the book. And my perspective is that the nature of this book is part of our entire nature, right? We exist alongside the horror, and the beauty exists alongside the horror, and that beauty can be reflected in the poetry, the photography, the art and thought that's in this book. But the point is it's not separate from the horror. And so it encompasses our entire lives. And I think that with Amiri Baraka, part of what he was talking about is not being kind of just pigeonholed. Also, I think he came up with the title Protest Poetry, which is, I think, also a play on words, whereas the book is of poetry and protest. And I think that part of what he is expressing here is not being painted into this corner, which still goes on, I have to tell you, when you're trying to even create a book that that has as many elements in it, right? Okay, so you have protest in a coffee book table and a coffee table book. Uh-huh. You know, it's like... who's going to buy that? You know, there were 5,000 pre-orders of this book, which is really good for poetry, and it's doing well. But it's kind of there's a lot of pulling together opposites in a way in this book. Even some of the poets in this book are not typically in the same anthology together. The fact that this is three different generations, for instance, there are these multiple different styles of writing. There are poets in this book who don't you know, just I say in here that this book is unapologetically political, but that doesn't mean that's the way all the poets see themselves. They are in this vessel. And so all of them aren't necessarily associated with that. I happen to be someone who thinks everything is political. But I think that when people talk about an issue like this, that all of us can come together to expose the truth. And also, since people are writing about their specific experiences, their specific ideas, that there's a real opportunity to bring these different and these diverse views and styles of writing together if you're open to it. And we were really open to that. We weren't just looking for one type of poet, one type of style, one point of view.
Michael Warr, poetry editor for Of Poetry and Protest, from Emmett Till to Trayvon Martin. I'm Wendy Butler, and this is Art Waves on KHSU. Michael Warr writes in an essay at the start of the book that he feels the book is unapologetically political. And he told me he personally considers everything political.
I think that for me, one of the important things about this book is to elucidate, you know, to shed light, to make noise, to remember, to expose, to preach the truth, as I was saying earlier, and to kind of show the complexity. So for me, the reason this book, and I just want to give props to Phil Cushway, who is the guy who kind of started with this idea and vision and brought me into it to help give it shape and to make it happen. But the fact that this book combines poetry but also has a statement by, for instance, the activist Reverend Dr. William Barber II, you know, the fact that it has these essays that are digging deeply into people's kind of personal take on life and poetry, you know, we very openly say, for instance, that at least I say that I see this book as a tool within a toolbox of many other tools. So I want people to take this book and use it as one of the tools they use to transform their condition. So I see politics as, you know, that's what we live our lives inside of politics, and the way that we can transform our lives is through political action, not just legislative, not just through the vote, but also through action. You know, often we hear people questioning the whole role of disruption. You know, you're trying to get home from work and there are cars all of a sudden blocking your pathway.
Mm-hmm.
Or people are chaining themselves to a building that you're trying to get into. And sure, it's disruptive, it's inconvenient, but people have to remember, there were times when there was no 8-hour day, right? I mean, people had to fight for that. They had to disrupt to change that. That our society, our country is, you know, full of examples of that, and we can take it for granted. I hope that people see this book not simply as a book of poetry, but as I describe it in my introductory essay, as a tool of many tools in a toolbox for transformation. What to me has always been very powerful about poetry, I'm a poet myself, and I would start writing poetry when I was in the 9th grade. And the thing is that poetry to me, like rap, one of the things that's so powerful about, you know, particularly the early days of rap, is that anybody had access to it. You know, you didn't have to own a printing press or own a press itself or a radio station to expound and to expose the ideas that you had. You know, you could literally stand on a corner and put on a beat, you know, on a beatbox, on a boombox, and all of a sudden you have this stage. And I think that poetry has an element of that, where everybody can take the tools that you need to write a poem and make that happen. But what's important is how you distribute it. You know, how do you expand it beyond a small circle? And this book, for instance, is a way of doing that. And we shot images, we shot videos of the photo shoots that we did. I interviewed Amira Baraka in his backyard after we did his photo shoot. So we have digital content in addition to what we've done with the book. So the reason I say all of that is because I truly do believe that poetry matters and that it has an impact. That's why I see this book as a tool that can help shape ideas, that can help people see things that they may not see otherwise, learn things that they may not have had access to. So I really believe that, but I also believe that we have to find the ways to constantly expand the reach of art and to expand the reach of poetry. Is very, very specific because that's my art form, but I often perform it with musicians, with, you know, I engage visual artists, I engage translators with my poetry. And so this is about getting the art out there into the world. By the way, that's what I do here at the Museum of the African Diaspora. It's all about taking, you know, a venue in this case, and bringing people into it and taking that venue in different ways out into the world. So art matters, but we got to get it out there. I just want to also use this as an opportunity to say that the designer of this book, Bob Ciano, who's an award-winning designer, you know, that he and particularly Phil Cushway, this was where a lot of their attention went into what pages went, what art went with poems, mm-hmm. and a placement and the look. I decided at the very beginning I was not going to put any of my own poetry in here because I knew there are so many great poets who should also be in this book that wouldn't be, because, you know, with the format that we had with the, you know, with the portrait, the essay, the, you know, the archival materials, I mean, we have 43 poets in this book. If this anthology did not have those other elements, which makes it so unique, there'd probably be at least 100 poets in this in this book. And so that was part of the decision. But I have to tell you, and I don't regret it, you know, I knew I would have an essay in here, and I tried to write that essay as poetically as I could as well.
Michael Warr, poetry editor for Of Poetry and Protest, from Emmett Till to Trayvon Martin. The book was released in June by W.W. Norton and Company. Thank you for listening to Art Waves, produced for KHSU at Humboldt State University. I'm Wendy Butler, the show's producer, engineer, and host. Art Waves, broadcast every Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. on KHSU. You can also listen to the broadcast live or to archived programs on our website at khsu.org.
Looking for more retirement income? You can make a contribution to KHSU that will pay you a lifetime income and help KHSU in the future. It's called Planned Giving, and we can show you how. Call KHSU at 707-826-4807.
Take a deep breath. In and out. In and out. Now, take off your clothes. Yes, all of them. Come along, quickly.
How to Breathe Underwater, Tuesdays at 2 on KHSU.
Stop shaking, please.
Public Service of Humboldt State University. This is KHSU and KHSU HD 90.5, Arcata KHSR 91.9, Crescent City and KHSG 89.9, Garberville. Preemptive promo there for the current program. It's Tuesday, it's 2. It's time for How to Breathe Underwater. I'm Gubby Blank. Thanks for tuning in on this great day. Support for How to Breathe comes from Wildberries Marketplace, where dreaming up a farm-to-table meal is made possible by the fresh produce that a variety of local farms and growers supply to the store every day. Wildberries, a farm-fresh supermarket of choice. Top of the Hill, G Street in Arcata. Further support comes from Crush in Arcata. Crush offers 30 wines by the glass, an expanded beer selection, trivia on Thursdays, and sports and political events on flat-screen TVs. There's also small plates and soup.